So drinking alcohol and doing drugs comes from a really noble place. I don't judge anyone who abuses substances because I know they just want the same thing I want. They want to be happy. I have abused these substances, and I know that it came from a place of just wanting to enjoy life. And that's why I say these substances are actually a sign that you want happiness in your life. So we're going to talk today about how this can be a detriment because there's always a crash, but it comes from a good place. And there are more positive ways to get the same joy and the same feelings. We're going to learn exactly how to do that without the use of artificial substances. And I'm really excited to share it with you. Let's rock. The revolution is here. I'm talking about a good mood revolution. The Good Mood Show is officially evolving and rebranding to the Good Mood Revolution. There's a lot of reasons because of this, but the biggest one is that you can't just put on a fake happy smile and feel good. We know that choosing good moods means also facing our bad moods, of facing our darkness within, and learning how to overcome it. Because happiness is a choice. It's a choice of our perspective. So the Good Mood Show you love is going to continue on under the new name, The Good Mood Revolution. Get ready for the journey. So we're all looking to be happier. It's the whole goal of life is to feel good. And a lot of times we try to take the quick and easy route. I certainly did. And in my young 20s, I thought, man, it's so easy to just go ahead and drink all this alcohol and I feel so good. And then I discovered drugs and I'm like, man, this feels even better and it's quicker. And I ended up getting addicted to substances in a means to try to feel good. And it, you know, anybody that has struggled with addiction, and I was a daily user, And I did a lot of things, and I don't need to get into all of it. But anyone who's struggling with addiction, it's not because they're a loser. It's because they're really trying to feel good. You know, they're trying to find a way to not feel bad. And this is the Good Mood Show. And, you know, I would never judge somebody who's done this or who's struggling right now because I've got a lot of friends and family members who've struggled, and I've struggled myself. And, you know, just know it's coming from a noble place, a place of wanting to be happy. But ultimately, you know, thankfully, I woke up from that daze. It was a 5-year daze. And when I was 25, I literally would wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweats. And I would look around and I didn't know where I was. And I took that as a signal from my soul that I was lost. And to get away, I literally moved away. I moved away from the town I was in. I was in Colorado. I moved all the way across the country to South Carolina to get away from all the influences I knew were not who I wanted to be in my future. And when I moved into a new town, I started a new identity where I wasn't gonna abuse substances to be happy anymore. And it was hard. I mean, it was really hard to get out of that routine and that cycle. And then I had to figure out how to feel happy again without the use of these substances. And you know, I'm really excited about today's episode because we've got an expert here, Mark Congdon. Has a master's from Harvard in organizational research, which is really the psychology of how the humans work and how our reward system works. He's written a book that is gonna talk about your ideal life, and it's 7 steps that are gonna help you harness your stress and discover your purpose and achieve your goals. And he really talks about how to use these chemicals in a positive way and without doing it the artificial way that I did when I was younger. So Mark, man, welcome to the Good Mood Show.
Yeah, no, thanks so much. So it's nice to get to know you here locally in Charleston. And I've really enjoyed listening to your podcast and, you know, just listening to you talk about that in your personal journey. I think that we have a lot in common. I went through my own struggle with searching for external chemicals to fill the void in my life and led to me becoming, you know, turning to alcohol and cigarettes and drugs to try to deal with my stress. I ended up gaining just 5 to 10 pounds every year. And I got up to almost 240 pounds, no muscle. And it wasn't until I threw my back out changing my daughter's diaper that I knew this, I'm not becoming the vision of the person that I want to become. And that was a big wake up call for me. But yeah, the passion in my life is go ahead.
How about the blessing of the back injury? Isn't it cool how sometimes like these negative things can be a wake up call? And I don't know if you ever go back and say thank you so much for my back giving out at that time to like wake me up to a better life.
No, more than you know. You know, I think that you know, discipline is how we learn. And sometimes I feel like God allows us to experience the discipline that we bring on in our own life. And it's the only way to learn and grow. So yeah, no, I definitely think about that a lot, about how the challenges that I've experienced, I'm grateful for those, because I might not even be here if it weren't for them.
Absolutely. And you know, there was a pretty long period of time where I was upset with myself for doing what I thought was a waste of a big chunk of my life. And I've since grown to understand that, hey, that was a necessary part of my journey. It also created a tremendous amount of humility in me and compassion for other people who struggle, right? So I'm grateful for my struggles, because it's helped me understand how other people can struggle too. So, but let's talk about not struggling. This is a good mood show. Let's talk about authentic happiness. So you've got this 7-step framework that teaches people how to harness the chemicals in their brains without using these artificial means and without getting, we talk about it. The downside of drugs and alcohol is there's always a come down. The upside is immediately you get dopamine released in your brain and you feel amazing and it's like awesome and it's so quick, but then you have to crash down. But how can we harness these chemicals without that harmful crash?
Yeah, well, no, I'd love to talk to you about that, the framework. First, just touch on the addictive nature of the drugs like you talk about. So it's you know, we can get addicted to drugs for those reasons, but we can also get addicted to our own goal achievement. And it's the same underlying process. There's a psychologist, B.F. Skinner, who studied this many decades ago, and he started by using pigeons. And so he put two groups of pigeons in these boxes that he made. And one group of pigeons pecked at this lever, and every time they picked at the lever, a little bit of food would come out. So they would get a reward every time they pecked the lever. And then there was another group of pigeons, and sometimes they would peck the lever, and sometimes food would come out, and sometimes they wouldn't, and it was random. And so they couldn't control the food. So the pigeons who got it every time, when the food eventually stopped, they stopped pecking. They realized, okay, whatever this is, broke. But the ones who were getting the uncontrollable reward continued to peck for over 200,000 times. Like, basically, we're going to peck until they died. And they became completely addicted because they thought, hey, maybe the next peck will give me the food. So that's pigeons. But then they repeated that with humans and saw the same thing. And that's where the slot machine and casinos came from, was that same idea. And so drugs and external sources of chemicals are ways for us to try to chase that reward when we're not getting it from the levers we have in our life. But if we don't get it the next time, then we crave it even more. And so yeah, I've just become fascinated by how, despite all of our different challenges and all of our different ways of trying to cope with those things, they're all based on the same chemicals and the same reward systems that we have in our brain and body. So what I've done, I actually developed this framework, which is called the I Got This Framework. It's an acronym, stands for Ideal, Goals, Objectives, Tasks. I actually developed it in my logistics career, which was the first 10 years of post-college. And I kind of stumbled into it, but it all started with me trying to deal with my own anxiety, because I had chronic, and I still deal with chronic anxiety. That's not something that I've fixed entirely. And that slips into depression. And I wanted to deal with that. So it all stemmed from me finding my own, a book that I found, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners know. It's simple. The ideas are simple, but they're very fundamental. And one of those ideas is to start with the end in mind. And it was that seed of an idea that I took with me into my career. And over the course of that, developed this framework. And then, you know, we can go into the details of that. But long story short on this framework is, when I knew that I had to share the lessons I learned with others, I went to Harvard and I got a degree in organizational psychology. And what I learned is the psychology and the neuroscience of the brain perfectly aligned with what I had experienced to be true and what became a successful career. And so the 7 steps that are involved in it are designed to capture the research and the psychology of what I've learned there with the experiential lessons that I've learned, and then paired that with the coaches now that have become a part of our company and our platform. And they're all combined and have been refined into this step-by-step process where if you follow it, you are tapping into the most fundamental processes that your brain runs on. And that is the beginning of experiencing results.
So, you know, in your book, you say step one is to identify your master goal.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do this?
There's lots of different ways to do it. In Covey's book, he talks about a funeral exercise where you can imagine your own funeral many years in the future. And then you think about who's there. You think about the things that they're saying. And then from that, you get an image of literally the end of your life. And then what you do with that is you say, okay, what am I doing today to make that a little bit more of a reality? There's lots of different ways to do it. What I really enjoy is hearing fulfilled, successful people talk about how they visualize where they're going. What we do at The Ideal Life is we do have a specific process where if somebody's looking for help, we can walk them through that. So our process starts with first looking at the 7 universal human life roles that we've identified through the psychology of that and coming up with vision statements for each one, taking those 7 sentences and pulling one word from each one. And that's a core value that helps you connect to each one of those visions for your life, combining those core values into one mission statement. So you have one goal, one vision, and then pulling out a 2 or 3 word mantra from that you can actually use in your daily life. So that's our formula. But at the end of the day, if you have a vision of the type of person you want to become, you can use that to fuel your goals.
I love mantras. Do you mind sharing your 2 to 3 word mantra that guides you?
Yeah, mine is imitate Christ. And that comes from my mission statement to be a disciplined servant in body and mind in imitation of Christ, our King. And for me, you know, those words are obviously very meaningful for different people, you know, but for me, not only does it allude to the fact that faith is a very important part of my life, but as I set real goals, whether it was when I trained for a full Ironman triathlon or the success that I had in business or the relationships that I have with my wife and kids, I do that by pushing myself outside of my comfort zone, trying to develop habits. And as I use the ideal, the vision of who I want to become with those specific things, I can be saying to myself, imitate Christ, while I'm groaning through pain on the bike in a 2-hour workout in the garage, right? And trying to find the energy to just push through and using those words, imitate Christ, you know, might not be the first words that somebody would utter in that situation. But to me, it reminds me of the journey that I'm trying to do to become a better person and how I reflect that.
I asked for a bracelet last year for my birthday that said HWLF. And I saw another guy at a mission driven company downtown that had this bracelet on. And I said, man, that reminds me of those 1990s bracelets. What would Jesus do? WWJD. And he said, actually, this is the answer to the question, what would Jesus do? And he said, HWLF is he would love first. That resonated so powerfully with me that I wore one of those bracelets for 6 months every single day because I love your mission. You know, I love this mantra that you have, imitate Christ. To me, my interpretation of that is just loving first. And what a cool way to lead your life when you're in a situation that's hard to be loving. And of course, we have those situations all the time happen and then choose to love anyway.
And what I love about, and so that can be difficult, right? Sometimes is to truly love, especially when you're having a challenge in a relationship with a coworker or, you know, a family member or whatever. It can be difficult, but you can get better at it. But to truly love perfectly is to experience perfection. We can never do that.
As you said that, love perfectly. I'm like, so actually in my book, I wrote a chapter on choosing love and I say the ideal is to always love first, as Jesus would. But I said, I'm not him. And that's beyond me. It's beyond my reach. So I said, I'm like, choose love first. And if I can't do that, then I'm going to choose love second. because it's not beyond me to recognize when I've fallen out of love and then to make a loving choice again.
You know, this idea of perfectionism has a very negative connotation to it. And it should when used when you're trying to actually be perfect, because you can't be perfect, right? But perfection is useful as a direction, right? So perfection is the direction, not the destination. Meaning, we are designed as humans to always be comparing a current state to some future standard. So like, even in how we move our hand around, the way we, that's actually a goal that our brain has, and it releases dopamine to get us to move our muscles. Like, that's part of the physical reaction there. And we have this idealized future state where my hand is 6 inches higher, and then so I do what's taken to get there, right? In everything that we do, our brain operates by thinking about what could be, it thinks about what is, and then it makes decisions to get there. And so we are designed to have goals in the future. What happens is a lot of us put too much focus on goals that we can actually achieve. And then once we achieve them, we lose the ability to tap into that reward system. So one example I talk about a lot is the one of Michael Phelps, the swimmer, because it's a perfect example of how we can set up a really strong dopamine reward system around a goal and how that can work until it doesn't. So he structured his entire life around this one goal of winning a gold medal. And from an early age, everything he did, what he ate, the people he hung out with, what time he woke up, was all looked at through this lens of winning a gold medal. And then he did that, and he did it so well that he beat every record, and there was really nothing else that he could do to prove himself. So you would think that because he achieved everything he set out for, he would be able to sit back and enjoy himself the rest of his life. But what happened is he went into his bedroom and he seriously contemplated taking his own life. He slipped into an incredible depression. He didn't know why. He turned to drugs himself. He got caught smoking weed on Instagram and got sponsorships taken away, got arrested for 2 DUIs. He was just going off the deep end. He couldn't look at a pool without physically getting sick and wanting to throw up. And he didn't know why. It was clearly chemical. And so he checked into a mental health institution to try to get figured out. And he said he broke himself down and he tried to answer that question of who am I outside the pool? When he came out of rehab, he had a new mission in life, which was to help people deal with their mental health issues. Now, that is a perfect goal. It's one that can never be fully realized because there's always more people to help. Nobody can be fully helped. So now he had this goal that was so far in the future, so difficult to achieve, that he could always keep it ahead of him. Yeah. He had a perfect goal that he could use to fuel his shorter term goals. Well, after that, he went back to the Olympics, performed even better, but then he continued to set goals like joining a mental health board, starting his own initiatives. And now he's dealing and growing in his struggle rather than potentially allowing it to consume him.
Yeah. You know, this is something that, you know, you listened to the episode about the book, Be Your Future Self Now. And in that episode, I was talking about the challenges I had last year and about how refocusing on the future I wanted to have was what brought me back into feeling like the person I wanted to feel like. And I love that you bring this Michael Phelps story to us. But you know, if you're listening to this episode and you are wanting to feel really good, you're listening to the Good Mood Show, you know, listen to what Mark's saying. We need a master goal. Like, visualize the end of your life. What did you want your life to be like? And then come back to today and say, what could I do to take steps to make it that way? So step two for you in your framework is to visualize but not fantasize. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
So each step in the framework solves a problem. Like, for example, the ideal solves the problem of not having that clear vision of the type of person you want to become. But each step in the process also creates a new challenge. The ideal, the vision of who you want to be distantly in the future, is very abstract. It's a potential. It's kind of blurry, you know? And so what can I do in this moment to be the person who's playing with my great-grandchildren when I'm 85 years old? That can be difficult, right? So what we start to do is we start to bring that vision down into the present. So the second step is what we call identifying a dream goal. We define that by saying a dream goal is something that you're not 100% confident you could ever achieve in your life, but it is possible. So like for me, my dream goal is to go to the World Championships in triathlon in Kona, Hawaii. I barely finished the one Ironman that I've done so far. But the cool thing about that sport is it's an age group. So I can compete against 75-year-olds when I'm 75. So I think that if I just keep at it, you know, 2 decades from now, maybe I'll get there, right? But it's a big ask. And so that's a dream goal for me. And the reason why in the book we frame that as visualize but don't fantasize is because spending time like really thinking about the things that we want to accomplish in our life can be really, really useful. And like, for example, Jim Carrey talks about how he wrote himself a check for $10 million for acting services rendered when he was still a struggling actor and struggling to pay rent. And he dated it for Thanksgiving, I think it was 1995. And then right before Thanksgiving 1995, he finds out that he got Dumb and Dumber and he's going to get paid $10 million. And so like the fact that he wrote that on a check, looked at it every day, allowed him to manifest a reality like incredibly close to what he actually thought about. But there are documentaries and books and industries out there that cater into stories like that, like The Secret on Netflix, if you've heard of that one. And they say, all you have to do is it's the law of attraction. All you have to do is think it and you can become it. To the point where they say you can turn red lights green, you can create open spots in a parking garage just by. So the interesting thing, so there's an interview that Jim Carrey does with Oprah where he talks about that story. He says he got the $10 million, the crowd busts in applause, Oprah starts applauding, everybody's, you know, freaking out. But then Oprah says something that's almost drowned out by the audience. She says, visualization works if you work hard. And then Jim Carrey starts laughing and he chuckles and goes, well, yeah, you can't just visualize and then go eat a sandwich. And that's the thing, is you have to work really hard. But when you do that, visualization helps. So there's a psychological theory from Gabriel Ottingen called mental contrasting. What she found through her research is that when positive visualization is that by itself, it's called positive fantasizing. It's like daydreaming, and it leads to negative outcomes. You're less successful. Unless immediately following the positive visualization, like in the next 5 seconds, you then think about all the negative things that could happen. What are the challenges you're likely to face? What can get in the way of that perfect vision? And then coming up with a plan with how you'll deal with that. When you pair those two things together, the positive and the negative, it actually is better to positively visualize. So the dream is all about having those dreams. It allows you to take the future vision of your life and put that into a tangible thing that you can really think about, like crossing a finish line or, you know, getting a certain career title, like really visualizing that and being able to have fun daydreaming about it, but know how to translate that into the next step and how to put that into real action.
Yeah, I'm so glad you talked about that. In my book, I write about how The Secret actually was a really positive influence in my life until it was not.
Me too. Yeah.
And it's awesome to understand that our thoughts are creative. And I needed that lesson at that time in my life. But then I took it too far, because The Secret takes it too far. It says that you literally could just sit in a lotus position, imagining your dream life, and it'll all just like show up in your lap. And I've always said that the thing The Secret lacks is action. That Jim Carrey put that check in his wallet, but then went ahead and took every acting class and put himself in every potential audition and met the right people and took every possible bold step he could take to make sure that it came true. And that's why it came true. He had a guiding light, which is this master goal you're talking about, and then visualized, but then took the steps to actually make it a reality. So talk about step three. What is it? Why do we need to outline the story of our life?
Yeah. So step three is to identify a horizon goal, is what we call it. So what we've done is the I Got This framework. It's the ideal goals, objective tasks. The goals, we break into three types of goals. They're short, medium, and long term. And the reason we do that is to create a path from the super long term into something that our brain can see, oh, I see how we're actually making progress to that. So the horizon is that medium level goal. And the way we define that is it's a goal that you do feel very strongly that you can achieve in your life. You just don't know when. So there's no time-bound nature to it. And when you can think about the achievable steps that lead to a dream goal. So like for me, if I want to get to the Kona World Championships, a horizon level goal there might be to run a sub 3-hour marathon. I'm not close to that yet, but I know if I do the right things, that is totally an achievable outcome for me over the next 5 to 10 years. And so I can start to say, okay, well, what else could I do to get to a sub 3 hour marathon? Well, maybe I could run a sub 45 minute 10K. And that's getting a little bit closer. And so as you think about this potential path towards the dream of achievable but difficult goals, you're starting to show your brain that there is a path that you can walk down. So in the book, I talk about a practice called a stick, like a walking stick, and spelled S-T-I-C. And that stands for so that I can. So I would be able to run a sub 45 minute 10K so that I can run a sub 3 hour marathon so that I can go to the world championships in Kona, Hawaii. So you're creating this outline of goals that show you eventually one that's just outside of reach in the near term. And once you have that and you see the progression towards the dream, now you're at the point where you can select a goal that you're actually going to work on and put a time on it where you can start to hold yourself accountable.
Wow. I was interviewed on the Joyful Life podcast this morning. And she was asking me about good moods. And she said, I've struggled with depression. And she said, and I asked her more about it. And she said that, you know, sometimes the depression gets so intense that I just feel hopeless. And you know, I can relate. I've been in that those emotions before myself. And I said, well, the first thing for me is I need to ask for help when I get into that situation. And other people who are in higher frequencies, higher levels of energy, usually are my path out of like those really dark emotions. But then from there, you have to set goals. And that's the part that actually now gives you hope for a greater future. But you can't, and I love this whole conversation we're having. So if you're listening and you have struggled with depression or sadness or hopelessness, the first step is ask for help. Ask somebody else, let them know what's going on because life's never hopeless. And then when you can, set some targets for your life, but they have to be achievable targets because if you set them too big, it can just add more and more pressure on top and you can spiral right back down. So I love this idea of the horizon goal. What's something that I can see that I feel very confident I could actually do because that adds to our confidence and that makes us have hope for a brighter future.
Yeah, it's like you can see it on the horizon. You can see it kind of slowly make progress and that gives you direction. You know, you talk about asking for help. So I got this framework as a whole. Each step incorporates the latest psychological research, but as a whole, it mimics what's called deliberate practice. That was coined by Anders Ericsson, who was a psychologist. He was considered the expert on experts. And he found that the difference between the top of the top in any profession, whether it's sports or chess or music or anything, was the fact that they deliberately practiced for about an hour every day. Malcolm Gladwell references Erickson's research in his book, The Outliers, where he talks about the 10,000 hour rule, because what Erickson found is when you deliberately practice for that amount of time, that vast amount of time, that's the one thing that differentiates top performers. And there's another type of practice called purposeful practice, which is a little bit different, but only by one thing. So purposeful practice talks about getting outside of your comfort zone, setting a goal, getting out of or breaking that goal into baby steps, having immediate visual feedback. The only difference between purposeful practice, which is what people who are pretty successful do, and deliberate practice, which is something that the most successful people do, is one thing, and that's having a coach. Because having somebody help you and guide you and help you set the next goal, helping give you support when you fail, help you learn from those failures and be able to incorporate that into skills, be able to show you the feedback and help you show you how you could be better. That is so critically important that it's the one thing that separates people from being truly successful and falling a little bit short.
Yeah, totally agree. I'm a huge fan of coaching and I know you are, and you have a coaching organization as well. What's the next step?
Yeah. So moving down. So the last type of what we identify as a goal, every element in here is really a goal, but we differentiate the dream horizon and then what we call milestone goal as being that word, because it's the things that we think about as humans, the things we actually want to achieve, those uncontrollable outcomes. So the milestone goal is something that finally we can really put a timeline on and say, hey, by this date, I want to achieve this specific outcome. And so that's really the role of the milestone goal, is to give you that goal that you can work on right now. And so by this point, we've taken the vision of the type of person that we want to become, the ideal, and we've now created a path towards, if I can in the next 3 months achieve this outcome, I know that that will be on the path towards achieving the next horizon goal, which is on the path towards achieving the dream goal, which is on the path towards becoming and realizing the ideal, which is ultimately impossible. And what you're doing now is you're setting up a dopamine reward structure, because your brain operates on the progression towards future goals. And as you make that progression, dopamine is released. Dopamine feels good. It also feels motivating. And what happens is that spills over and it stays in your bloodstream for seconds, sometimes hours, after you do these thoughts and actions related to that goal progression. And that's really the magic of the framework. And so that's the milestone goal.
What do you mean when you say control the controllables?
Yeah. And so that's the next step, which is to start identify objectives. So the milestone goal is a great, if we go back to the story of the pigeons at the beginning of the podcast, the milestone goal is the pellet that you're trying to get. It's the outcome that you're actually going to receive. And, you know, and if you're the pigeon, put it in your mouth or your beak. and so the problem is that we're not always going to achieve our goals, because goals are usually influenced by others or by the environment. So sometimes we get them, sometimes we don't. Lionel Messi, greatest soccer player who ever lived, when he scores, even on the MLS team, Miami, he doesn't win every game with them. When he scores, he pumps his fist. If he knew he was going to score, he wouldn't do that. He knew that he could influence the result, but he was still really happy when it happened because it was uncontrollable. I talked earlier about how that leads to addiction. So what we need to do is we need to find what we actually can control so that we can become more like the pigeon who gets the pellet with every click. So the next step is to identify how we do it in our framework is three objectives that lead towards the goal, three controllable things that we could do that would set us up for success for that outcome. And so these are usually like projects or like one-time things that we can do to set us up for that goal. And then on the other controllable side, we have the task. So the task is a little bit different, because that's a habit that we want to develop that if we were to incorporate that into our life, even past the goal achievement, that's really what's going to let us know that we are becoming the type of person that's more like the ideal, not just achieving goals, but becoming a certain type of person. That's where the real magic happens. So the task is like, for example, if I wanted to have a viral blog and that was my goal, three objectives might be to research the blog, you know, publish a blog, and then market the blog, all controllable things I can do. But the task would be to write 500 words a day. And you would do that over the course of the goal pursuit. But then the hope is that by the end of those 3 months, you develop that habit and you continue to write 500 words a day. And so that's actually the final step, or the sixth step, is to do that. And what we do at the end there is we actually identify an identity statement tied to that habit. So like that would be maybe I am a writer, and it taps into the psychology of positive affirmations. And so at the end, what we've done is we have created controllable actions that lead us to the point where we believe we can influence the goals that lead to the type of person we want to become. Now we have put us in the best possible position to be releasing all of the chemicals our brains are designed to reward us with. And then that spills over into the rest of our life, and we see all of our different life roles benefiting from that.
You know, I of course agree with all of this 100%, and I've watched it play out in my own life. I'm a really disciplined person, and I've had numerous people that I've talked with about this type of progress, where we set a big goal and we break it down, and then all you have to do, it's really simple. All you have to do is just do these tasks every day, and it's yours, like guaranteed. Because we just broke it down. All you have to do is just do these tasks every day. So I've got a real estate company, and I'll have people that come and work for me. And I'm like, you're going to earn over $100,000 in the next 12 months. It's yours. It's promised to you. All you have to do is have 10 to 20 conversations every day, improve your skills, come to these trainings. Like, I've got all of it mapped out. And then I find that the majority of people don't have the same level of discipline. So what do you say to somebody that's just not as structured and disciplined in their life about what they can do about this?
And that's the magic of the I Got This framework. So the seventh step, the final step of it, is to deliberately flow. And that actually doesn't require anything. It's the result of the previous six steps. And so earlier I talked about how deliberate practice, that top performers only did that for about an hour a day. The rest of their time they spent doing what I call comfortably practicing the skills that they already had. So the trick is to capitalize on the wins you get from just taking one baby step at a time. So one of the earliest psychological laws that was developed was the Yerkes-Dodson law. They found that people who aren't stressed enough don't perform well because they don't even get off the couch. But people who stress themselves too much by taking on too much burn out and they're not successful either. The trick is to find that Goldilocks zone right in the middle where they are just stressed enough to be able to deliberately practice. And so what really helps with people who are struggling to find discipline in their life is first to remove the burden of feeling like you have to spend 8 hours a day doing all the things that require discipline. Just focus on one thing that you can deliberately practice. And what's really useful is if you're trying to do this and work, actually focus on maybe a relationship that you can work on instead and identify the task and the objective and then goals that will help you become the type of person you want to be in your relationships. Now, what's going to happen as you do that is you unlock the chemicals that tell your brain that you are on a path towards becoming a better version of yourself. Do that for about an hour a day, and then don't worry about the rest of the day. Do the things you need to do. What happens is those chemicals that are released, they linger in the bloodstream. It's called the spillover effect, and it's been shown in research. These hormones in your body last for seconds, minutes, sometimes hours. And the result of those chemicals that make you feel good and motivated and energized affect the other things you do, even though they're unrelated to the thing that triggered them. And so all of a sudden, because you take off the burden of trying to do too much, which allows you to focus and have the right amount of stress on one thing, a rising tide lifts all ships. All of a sudden, now you have the energy to become disciplined in the other things, but it only happened from taking the pressure off yourself to be disciplined in those things. So I would say just baby steps, one thing at a time, but be very focused about it and be consistent about it. And then watch the magic that happens as a result of that.
Yeah, I've certainly experienced that. One of my favorite quotes is how you do one thing is how you do everything. And that's what we're talking about here. Man, Mark, you are such a wealth of positive information about how to live a great life. I'm sure there's people that are listening that are going to want to reach out to you. You know, how can they get in touch?
Yeah, well, you can visit us at theidealife.com. And that's where you can find different resources we have. Like we do workshops for individuals who can learn, helped by one of our coaches, how to identify the I got this framework for yourself. That's just a 4-hour workshop. And by the end of that, you know how to incorporate it in your own life. But also follow us on LinkedIn or on our social media handle, theidealife.iti. And, you know, we're just really excited right now about this book that we just launched last week. Forbes Books published it. We were in Times Square. We had a big launch and Amazon sold out in the first day. And we're already printing thousands more copies. To see the impact that this is already having for people is giving me so much joy, just to help people experience better moods in their life. And so I would encourage people to check out that book. You can buy it on Amazon. And if you do, it would really help us if you left a review so we can continue to help and try to impact more people.
Awesome. Mark, thank you for being here today. Y'all, thank you for listening. I know you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And be sure to subscribe so you get a good mood every week. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Good Mood Show with Matt O'Neill. For free resources, videos, and materials about getting into your best moods, head over to thegoodmoodshow.com. See you next week, same time, same place.